Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with Steve Pavlik. It's a good week in Penn State land. It took to the very end, Steve, but they escaped with a 26-25 win over Minnesota on Saturday.
That they did, despite their best efforts that time. But the cardiac kids sort of living up to that reputation. You know, I'll give them credit for pulling out a win. There were a lot of teams, I'm sure we'll probably talk about that at some point, that were going up, ranked teams going up against unranked teams on the road that weren't successful, that would give anything to have the result that Penn State did. And just to be able to find a way to, when you're not playing your best, honestly, on all sides of the ball, I think that's probably the worst game they've played collectively this season, to pull it out. And I thought they were out-coached and out-played up until the last 2 minutes or so. But as critical as I've been of James Franklin, I will give him credit for those two calls at the end of the game. I'm sure we'll get to with the fake punt and the fourth down. And I'll just quickly on that fourth down point out, probably learned something from Indiana game. Tyler Warren going down, not running it into the end zone. You know, just going back to 2020. But there are a lot of things that sort of surface that are discouraging. But again, a win's a win, playoff bound, and probably even seated in a favorable position. So that's a really important thing here. So better to be a Penn State fan than an Alabama fan, an Ole Miss fan, a Texas A&M fan. Eat that, Paul Feinbaum. But I'm sure we'll get there.
You're not the biggest Paul Feinbaum fan, huh?
No, I'm not.
Well, I think you and along with every other Penn State fan, that's the case. Let's stick with Penn State, Minnesota first. And this was a game that had a lot going into it, had a lot of Penn State fans nervous. And I felt that the team had been playing so well recently. And yeah, I know it's Purdue, but prior to, they didn't make the kind of mistakes that are self-inflicted. They did their job very efficiently against Purdue. The week before, it was against Washington. They were playing really well. What worried me early on is it seemed like those things that had cropped up earlier in this year, the starting slow, the difficulty in short yardage situations that cropped up. Now, part of that, I feel like PJ Fleck deserves a lot of credit. His team was ready to play at the start of this game.
We did. I think last week we talked about the motivation for Fleck. It's senior day. They had a week off to prepare. They're going up to number 14. This is their whole season. They're not looking at the playoffs. And they played like it. And I think Fleck, I know he gets a lot of negative attention for some of his antics, but he had his team ready to play. And honestly, Franklin did not have the team ready to play. Starting three and out and then having Minnesota scripted drive, go right down the field and score. Yeah, that's something that we talked about, this second half team being sort of a code word for a slow start. We thought we were moving beyond that. Fortunately, that sort of came back. I think the other thing that you reiterated too was on both ends of the line, you know, offensively not being able to get, you know, the third short yardage when we needed it, even with Tyler Warren back there. We saw a lot of Nick Singleton. He looked healthy. He just wasn't able to be productive, I think, from the guys up front. And then on the other side of the ball, you know, defensively, it seemed like when Minnesota was third and short, they were able to get it with relative ease. There were a lot of missed tackles. We had guys jumping off the ball off sides again. It was not the best defensive performance. That said, after they sort of gave up 10 points, I think for the most part, you know, the defense sort of came together, although they still had trouble getting off the field in Minnesota, sort of having some longer drives than they really needed to. Really, it was a disappointment in the special teams, too. You know, up until the end, I thought, you know, to the blocked kick, you know, whether it was the punt, whether it was the extra point, I mean, that's just sloppy. And, you know, usually, I think there's a statistic, Franklin may have cited it, actually, about teams that, you know, give up a blocked punt and end up losing, because it's sort of a bigger indicator that, you know, the team's not ready to play. But again, the fact that they were able to overcome this, even Aller, I think for the most part he played well. I thought some of the decisions he made at the end of the game, running the ball strongly, staying in, actually delivering the blow a couple times when he was carrying, he's a big guy, but he missed some passes. They had a nice touchdown to Amari Evans earlier in the game. It looked like they ran something comparable to it later on. He was there and just missed the ball. And I think one of the throws he had to Warren, you know, it had been a better pass, sort of in the right side of the end zone there. I think Warren may have been able to try to make a play for it. But I guess you can't make every throw. But, you know, in a close game, you miss a couple clutch ones. That can be the difference.
Well, let's talk. Drew Aller, I find interesting. I've been a very big advocate of his. I think he's playing really well. It's fascinating to me. He ended up completing 75% of his passes in this game. And I'll still agree with you. I don't think it was his best game. I think it's we've now changed the standard for him. We expect more from him. So even when he has a poor game, he completes 75% of his passes, which is, by any measure, pretty good. But there was a lot of things going on in that game early, which, like I said, it was sort of the old things that it felt like Minnesota was one step ahead of Penn State, which when you hear that, that's got to be coaching as part of it. And also, I don't forgive the players for, I don't know if not being ready, but it seemed early on, Minnesota was winning the line of scrimmage.
They were. I mean, we talked about the styles and, you know, how Penn State had shown some encouraging signs of improvement against Illinois, Wisconsin, teams that I think were more comparable to the makeup and the style of play that Minnesota wanted to play. So, you know, I think it's just sort of discouraging reminder of sort of the old Penn State teams getting sort of pushed around on both ends of the ball. I'm not really sure what to attribute that to. You know, a lot of missed tackles, guys that were in position and just whiffed, guys running by the play on defense, you know, that wasn't encouraging. Aller under a lot of pressure, that's something we haven't really seen a lot. You know, I think that sometimes, though, I wonder if they're almost too conservative with not letting Aller throw the ball more. I actually thought he did a pretty good job in the first half once things settled down. When he was given time to throw, finding some receivers down the field. And that long touchdown to Evans, we've been sort of waiting for a long time to have this deep ball threat, and finally got it. You know, so kudos to that. And then I thought it was significant when Aller took them down the field there towards the end of the first half. I know they botched things with not blocking the extra point, but again, just sort of unleashing them there and, you know, showing that this was, you know, effective, reminiscent of when they sort of took the training wheels off there in the USC game, let the guy throw. So, you know, it was not their best game, but finding a way to win. And one thing I guess that I would sort of add that may be discouraging too is I think made a comment last week about, you know, we don't really know how this offense is going to perform against a good defense. We saw what it looked like against Ohio State. And that's sort of what, to me, was concerning. I think Minnesota is a pretty good front six, so to speak. I don't know that they're necessarily as talented. They're probably better schemed than Ohio State. Maybe that's where they make that up. But when you talk about, you know, what's going to happen here in the playoffs, there was sort of this outstanding question of what is this offense going to do when you actually face a good defense? And I think you had a decent defense. We didn't call them a good defense with Minnesota. Just look at their record. And the results weren't encouraging. There were a couple of turnovers that the defense got, and the offense settled for field goals. Go back to some of the prior weeks where when they were having success, they were getting touchdowns. They weren't settling for field goals. We didn't have that this week, and that was one of the things that plagued them against Ohio State.
Well, you use the expression taking the training wheels off. I've been an advocate of handing the keys over to Drew Aller, and I think we've seen several examples when often it took that last possession of the first half. Hey, you got 2 minutes left, so you've got to get the ball down the field. Give the ball to Drew Aller, and more often than not, he gets the ball down the field for you. And we saw against USC, down a couple touchdowns. Hand the game over to Aller, he gets you touchdowns. And I think they need to do more of that. And what I found interesting was on the first couple possessions, Steve, it was that short yardage situation again. And this was the first time, you know, Tyler Warren went out there in the Wildcat, and he was stuffed twice. And that I think that this was Minnesota was prepared for it. They've had several games to scout to see what Penn State does with Tyler Warren. I would have that put, I believe, Minnesota one step ahead of Penn State. I would have liked to have seen Penn State do something else out of that to show that they're one step ahead instead of one step behind.
Well, I heard a little bit of PJ Fleck, the coach from Minnesota's press conference, and he talked a lot about, you know, focusing specifically on Warren and trying to stop him, and also went on to say that he thinks he should be a Heisman candidate, because even with all their emphasis there, in the second half, he took the game over again. I think it's sort of a matchup. I thought Minnesota had a pretty good defensive line front. They're prepared. They've got an extra week, senior day, all these reasons. But you like to think, you know, at the end of the day, that Penn State should be able to dictate what they want to do, even if the other team sort of recognizes what's coming there. And, you know, Kotal Nicki, they made a big deal about him returning to Minnesota. Okay, this wasn't his best game. I think the fact that every time right now he's faced two pretty good defenses with Minnesota and Ohio State, the offense really hasn't had as much success as it had against some of these lesser teams. It's starting to make me maybe dial back some of my optimism, candidly, of him and his assessment. Because it's one thing to score a lot of points against teams that everybody else puts up points against. Really, the measure of a coach is what are you going to do when you're actually facing some of these better defenses. And right now, the results haven't been that great.
Well, I think there's a case to be made for their ability to handle adversity. And we'll get more into the national picture later. But you have a situation where the number one team in the country, Oregon, went into Wisconsin and scored 6 points in the first three quarters. And so I think, and to Oregon's credit, they found a way to win that game. Just like Penn State went there, had Drew Aller hurt, and they had a backup quarterback come in and perform. So I think Penn State has it in them to adjust. Now, they also, for the first time, had issues on special teams. And what's disappointing to me, and I think it's a very correctable thing, is Riley Thompson on that punt. He looked to take an extra beat like these rugby-style kickers will often do. When you're on your own end zone, get the ball out.
I agree. Although I would take issue with something he says. Not the first time we've had disappointing special teams. Remember the beginning of the year before they switched to Parker kicking the field goals next week?
True.
That was pretty disappointing until they made that switch.
But to their credit, they made the correction, and you know, the kicking game has been much improved. I got a feeling Riley Thompson won't make this kind of mistake again, though.
I hope not. That's what you hope you take away from some of these things. The experience is the best teacher.
And you like it. The better way is when you make a mistake but still get the win. That's how you want to learn your lessons. All right, when we come back, Steve, let's talk about that last drive for the Nittany Lions. 3 for 3 on fourth down. We'll talk about it when we come back. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He's Steve Pavlik. This is quarter number two of our show. We're talking about the Penn State-Minnesota game. Penn State escapes with a win. You know what, Steve, in another week or another season, this kind of game would have, I think, caused a lot of criticism, more so than we're throwing out there. Except if you look around the rest of the country, going on the road and playing an unranked team, a lot of teams would have loved to escape like Penn State did. And first of all, this was a game, I don't think James Franklin has the monkey off his back because he won this game. But if he would have lost this game, Steve, boy, that monkey on his back would have turned into a gorilla. And it took the last drive. I don't know about you, but I really loved that. And it's easy to say it in hindsight, except I said it before the play. I wonder if they're going to fake this. It seems like an opportunity. I know he would be second guest from here to tomorrow if they didn't make it. But that was a gutsy call.
Absolutely. It shocked me. I give them credit not only for identifying it, but having the guts to call it and then executing it. Luke Reynolds is somebody who, you talk about linebacker, you, it really is tight end you now. It really is going to fill the, hopefully, shoes there by Tyler Warren in the next couple of years, I hope. And a lot of good guys ahead of him, too. Lots not to be excited about. In terms of Franklin, you know, my fear of just watching the game, it felt very reminiscent of 5 years ago. I think Penn State was ranked number four at the time, too. You had this team that you just sort of keep letting them hang around. You really don't have any business doing so. And they just seem to be more up for the game and playing better, and really on both ends of the ball there. So to be able to, for Franklin to be able to make that call, I think it's a sign of maturity. I mean, I was also thinking, too, to your point, you know, if it didn't work out, yes, I would be the first to criticize him. But, you know, if you sort of think about where you were in the game at that point, maybe Minnesota kicks a field goal if you can hold them, even a touchdown. But you probably still get a chance to get the ball back. And at that point, just looking at the rest of the drive, as much as the Penn State offense was sort of at times sputtering, they were sort of able to get it together there and really have one of these drives where they melt the clock. And that's something that prior teams under Franklin had really struggled, and that's an area that's been encouraging this year, just to be able to see, you know, can they do that, have the ability to have these long sustained drives there at the end of the game and just not give the ball back to the other team. It took a few other fourth down plays, and I guess you could always criticize them for not getting on third down, but results are all that matter. And when you really put everything on there multiple times in fourth down, similar to the USC game, that is a sign of maturity. And in that sense, the players were well coached, that they were able to, with all the chips on the line, go out there and execute the way they did, particularly at that last play there.
You know, Steve, a few thoughts on that. First of all, you're right. They executed the play well. They were well prepared. That's a well-coached thing to do there. I'm also with you that I think it was a good gamble, because even if Minnesota scores, the game's not over. You have time to come back. Whether it was a field goal or touchdown, you have time enough to respond to it. And I think too often teams get conservative in that kind of scenario. I would have been okay if on the very first possession when Penn State had fourth and one, if they had gone for it, I would have been okay with it. I really would have been okay with it the second time when they were closer to midfield. I think they were on the 45-yard line, and they had a similar fourth and very short. I would have advocated going for it. I'm glad that in this last drive, to me, that's Franklin showing confidence in his team, much more so than he did against Ohio State when he got conservative and I feel just played not to lose. The other part to it is when you talk about extending that drive going down the field, I think a lot of that has to do with the quarterback, Drew Aller, making plays for you, extending plays. And even prior to, I think it was, yes, the last fourth down when he ended up passing the ball. On third down, he escaped the pocket, ran to put themselves in position to go for it. And that was, again, this is the guy that everybody thought was a statue behind the line of scrimmage.
No one's going to confuse him with being a legitimate dual threat quarterback, but being mobile enough and aware enough to make the right decision to extend plays and to get something when there's really nothing else there is something where I think Aller's made a dramatic improvement this season compared to last. I'll also point out that second fourth down that they got, probably the least glamorous of the three, but recognizing before that the direct snap to Warren, Minnesota was prepared for that. And the fact that Warren, when he receives it, gets it so far back there. Now, sometimes it's worked out prior to this where he's able to sort of pick and choose where he sees the lane and make it. But you're also getting the ball back 5 yards deep, as opposed to Aller, as big as he is, right there under center. And to put those two big linemen behind him to get sort of the bush push from that old USC-Notre Dame game, Reggie Bush, I think, pushed Matt Leinart across. I mean, that's sort of making a game day adjustment too, where, you know, hey, this play used to work for us. They seem prepared for it. Let's do something else. And the fact that they executed it. So I'll give them credit for that. Just wish it didn't take to the last drive of the fourth quarter to start giving credit to some of the coaching decisions. But I guess we can't always get what we want.
But hey, better late than never.
Absolutely.
Better late than never. I know there's quite a few people in Tuscaloosa who would have loved to escape with a win like that.
Well, I think one of the things that should be pointed out for that game is Alabama got demolished. That wasn't a close game.
Oh, they got clocked.
With Penn State and Minnesota, at least it was a close game. To their credit, you were in there, you're able to see it through. That was not the case for Alabama. I'd like to see what Paul Feinbaum has to say about that.
Well, we'll talk about that a little more, where the SEC is. But, you know, I'm finding it interesting. I want to get your take on this. Playing these games on CBS, and now it's a couple of them, and it's you know, Nessler and Danielson, just after years and years of those guys having called SEC games, Steve.
Those guys forget that they're not calling SEC games. I mean, they're also, in my opinion, anti-Penn State. You never hear them say anything kind about Penn State. Making the point that, oh, you know, there was something to the effect of Gary Danielson. I think he went to Purdue. We ought to know better. Pointing out that, well, you know, Minnesota throws the ball to the receivers, and that's where their passing game runs through. Unlike Penn State, which sort of a backhanded way of saying that Allard just sort of checks down to Warren and Singleton a lot. Okay, I mean, I understand that Penn State's wide receiving corps definitely not the strength of the offense, but that just seemed unnecessary. And just listening to them the past couple of weeks, I find myself wanting to search for the mute button more and more. They really don't add anything. And you know, I would think that they should remember at some point that they're not calling games for the SEC anymore. You know, you might as well recognize who's paying you and act accordingly.
Well, there's such a thing, a national narrative, I'll call it, Steve, that you hear. The national narrative has been how strong the SEC is. And for many years, they always had Georgia and Alabama, who were easily the best, two of the best, maybe three teams in the country. Maybe Ohio State was there with them. They don't have that kind of team this year. And it's a but the narrative still is pervasive. So what happened? Hey, after two losses, well, they're better than any one loss team from the Big Ten because it's the SEC. Now, I want to hear more about how strong these three loss teams are.
I remember they were trying to prop up LSU. Last I recall, they lost to USC to start the season, and USC's not exactly the top of the pecking order for the Big Ten. The motivations and intentions for a lot of these networks, particularly ESPN, probably the most egregious in all this. Obviously, they're aligned with the SEC, so I understand where they're coming from and why they're motivated to say what they're saying. But you really just can't take these guys as honest brokers. And my hope is that in the postseason here, when we get some of these SEC Big Ten matchups, that maybe we get the opportunity to put this to bed and deliver the results that we're all hoping for.
Well, I think the SEC has already shot themselves in the foot when you have you know, ranked teams. Oklahoma is not a good team. This is not the Oklahoma that we all remember. All right. They're a bad team. And as you put it, Alabama was never in that game. Oklahoma smoked them. And I know I've already been reading the things. There was a very bad call that went against Alabama, which would have been a touchdown, which would have meant the score would have been 24-10 instead of 24-3.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, losing by three touchdowns, you can't blame it on one call. But Auburn's probably near the bottom of the SEC pecking order, and A&M goes down there and finds a way to lose. And apparently A&M and Texas, whoever wins that game, is going to play Georgia in the SEC title game. So don't talk to me with these like quality wins and all this nonsense where you have your supposedly better teams here losing to unranked ones on the road. Now you have multiple losses. They're just cannibalizing themselves. And I'm sort of watching to see what the committee does with Indiana after their loss here. And, you know, are they trying to now somehow, been talks about, are they going to try to put Notre Dame ahead of Penn State? I hope to God they don't do that. But that's one thing I've heard some of the national discussion going out. So we'll see what the rankings are. We're recording this obviously before they come out.
I've seen some of those also where they're projecting the where it's going to fall, and I'm going to feed the beast here, okay? ESPN had an article with, I don't know, like five or six of their people each projecting, and I was amazed. The vast majority of them had dropped Penn State from like sixth in the seeding to like eighth and even ninth. And maybe that will happen, but the committee has shown no inclination at all to do that, Steve.
Well, that goes back to the point about ESPN and what their motivations are. I mean, ESPN's coverage of Penn State, I'm going back to the way they covered the Paterno situation there with the Sandusky scandal, and that was atrocious. Okay, so I've sort of been down on ESPN for the way they mishandled that and misled things and really did not stick to the facts. But now you get into just the way that the whole SEC bias here and trying to justify a way to somehow they can feel that they can influence the committee to take more SEC teams so they can make more money because of this contract. I'm going to just call it out. I mean, that's what's going on here. And it's disgusting. I wish that Fox and the Big Ten Network, affiliated with Fox, sort of do a little bit of the same. They should start jockeying for their own team to push back against this SEC narrative. Maybe we'll get to that point. But you know, right now, you got to call a spade a spade.
All right, that's going to be it for quarter number two. When we come back, Steve, I want to take a closer look at that national picture and where things are headed for the playoffs. We'll do that when we come back. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He's Steve Pavlik. It's the third quarter of our show. It's time to take a look at the playoff picture, Steve. You know what? Let me tell you something. For the last couple weeks, I had the playoffs figured out. I had it all figured out, all right? 2 weeks ago, I said there were three games left that mattered, okay? After the, I guess it was Georgia, Tennessee. Then this week, it's Indiana, Ohio State. Next week, it's Texas versus Texas A&M. Other than that, Steve, we got this thing pretty much settled. Then Saturday happened. I was wrong. I wasn't wrong. I was really, really wrong. This was a crazy weekend.
I don't know that you were wrong. You were just, at the time, the information that you had to work with and what the games were supposed to have. I mean, that's why they play the game now, is you get these upsets, and we're heading into one more weekend here in the regular season. There are probably going to be more upsets again. But I go back to the 12-team playoff. I know a lot of people have been down on it. To me, it's just making it more exciting. I think the committee's job is probably easier prior to Saturday. So we'll see what they do. I think it's a little more intrigue. It's probably why, going back to the discussion about ESPN sort of politicking to try to get more SEC teams slotted, it's not going to be as easy as they think. So you know, I'm really curious to see what happens with Indiana. I still feel good about the idea of the Big Ten getting four teams in, particularly one loss, Penn State, one loss, Indiana. The fact that a lot of these teams sort of on the bubble there in the SEC loss, I think should only make that case stronger to get at least four teams from the Big Ten. And it's done, one thing that Penn State has going for it, you know, last week I was sort of lamenting the fact that Penn State didn't have a ranked win on their schedule. They have Illinois. And so that's something to hang your hat on. And the fact that they pulled it out against Rutgers of all teams, hey, a win's a win. So that's good for Penn State.
That one was a crazy finish. It really was. But, you know, I told you I thought I had it all figured out the last couple weeks. Now, Steve, I really do. This time I mean it. Now, you had asked the question about it's going to be interesting to see what they do with Indiana. After that game, since it was a noon game, Indiana loses. I'm thinking, okay, they've got their excuse now if they want to knock Indiana out. They do. I didn't think it would. I thought, well, maybe they'll be 11th or they'll be on the bubble, you know. But after Alabama, Ole Miss, and Texas A&M all lose, they made it easy. It's not one loss Indiana versus two loss Southeast Conference school. It's one loss versus three. Alabama is 4-3 in the conference, Steve. 4-3.
Let's also look at two of those losses. They Bad were to losses. Oklahoma and Vanderbilt, not exactly powerhouses within the SEC structure.
I think as it is right now, Ole Miss, Alabama, and Texas A&M are out. I think the three losses knocks them. I know A&M, I guess, if they beat Texas, they have a way in. But if A&M beats Texas, I think Texas becomes a bubble team.
I think that's probably fair, but let's just assume that Texas beats A&M, and that's sort of the win that Notre Dame's been hanging their hat on. Well, suddenly that doesn't look very attractive either. I mean, you know where I stand on Notre Dame. I think they're a fraud, but that would just reinforce that view.
I know with their loss to Northern Illinois, but you start – and I know a lot of people just say, they're out, and I wish they were. And I'm still not 100% sure Notre Dame's going to beat USC, okay? I'm not sure of that. But say that they hold serve, I do think we're starting to get, you know, some clarity for the playoffs. And the only team in the Southeast Conference, when you start talking about, well, schedule and all, I think that has an argument, is Georgia. And when a couple weeks ago they became kind of like the bubble team, I said, don't worry, you know, teams will lose. But Georgia has now put themselves in a pretty good position. Here's my take on the playoffs. I want to get your thoughts on this. I think the winner of the Big Ten, Oregon or Ohio State, will be seeded number one. And I think whoever loses that game will get the number five seed. I think let's say Texas wins the Southeast Conference, that puts them at the number two seed. If Georgia, I think it'll be Georgia, Texas. If Georgia wins that game, I think they become the number two seed, and Texas probably drops to where I had Georgia was like number eight. Okay. So if we leave that, and then you have conference winners, ACC winner, Miami, then the fourth seed, which everyone assumed would be from the Big 12, if Boise State wins out, it's probably Boise State who gets that fourth seed. So how's that top four getting the bye sound to you?
That sounds right to me.
Okay. let's keep moving then.
I was going to say, I wish I had more to push back on, but it's hard to argue.
No, it's okay. If you agree with me, I'm okay. I'm okay with that, Steve. It's not a problem, really.
I'm glad you can take yes for an answer, because that's
what I can. I can take yes for an answer. Now let's go to the next four, which would be the teams that get the home playoff game. As I said, I think the loser of Oregon, Ohio State, ends up with the number five seed. They're the first at-large bid. I think Penn State gets the next one, is sixth. And you had mentioned there's like some blowback, pushback right now of talk of Notre Dame passing Penn State. I don't think the committee has given any indication that that's going to happen. What do you think?
I hope not, but I'm just reading what's sort of going around the social media circles right now. There's a fair amount of speculation about that. People pointing out, you know, oh, well, Penn State struggled to beat, you know, an unranked Minnesota team. Okay, then go back to the beginning of the conversation. A lot of teams wish they did. Last I recall, Notre Dame lost to Northern Illinois at home, and their signature win is looking less impressive. Now that A&M went down to Auburn and lost, they may lose to Texas again. I mean, suddenly that win doesn't look as impressive. And like you said, maybe USC will do the world a service and defeat Notre Dame, save us all from this. But
I'm like you, the resume, they've had Penn State ahead of Notre Dame, and I think the resumes, you know, definitely Notre Dame's loss is worse than Penn State's loss. So along with, you know, looking at the wins, neither team has beaten like another top 10 team or anything. So I don't think you could bump Notre Dame ahead of Penn State.
Well, let's talk about Penn State's loss, though, in the context of the playoff committee. They've lost to what many consider to be maybe the number two team. There's a good chance that Ohio State beats Oregon, I think. I mean, look, Ohio State went out there, barely lost on the road. We talked about how these times and things make a difference. Going to play that game in Indiana. I think there's a very good chance that Ohio State beats them. So they're probably going in at that point, maybe the one or two seed. And you look at Penn State to say, look, they played one of the top probably two teams at that point, lost by seven in a game where Penn State really didn't play that well. You know, I just look at that. So I'll put that loss up against most anybody else's, particularly if it's your only loss.
You don't think losing to Northern Illinois is a better loss?
Jim, don't beat me.
So, and you know, you say about Ohio State, I think they will be favored in that game against Oregon. And I don't think it's a question of them being one or two. I think they win that game. They're the number one seed. You know, that they avenge their only loss, beat the only undefeated team in the country, the undefeated number one team. So I think, like I said, the loser of Oregon, Ohio State would be that fifth seed. Penn State, I believe, will be the sixth. I do believe Notre Dame will be the seventh seed. And then I think the eighth seed will be the loser of Texas versus Georgia, if we think that's going to be the Southeast Conference championship game. So we still good? Ohio State, Penn State, Notre Dame, and Georgia as the four teams that get a home playoff game.
That sounds good to me.
Next, I think next up, the two teams for 9 and 10, it'll be between Indiana and Tennessee. And I think this is the question where you ask, how far would Indiana drop? Would you drop them below Tennessee or not?
I wouldn't. I mean, what's Tennessee's what's their signature win?
Tennessee has a win against Alabama.
Which I thought that was what you were going to say, and that looks a lot less impressive after Alabama went down and got annihilated by Oklahoma.
And they have, you know, they got handled by Georgia, and they also lost to Arkansas. But the Alabama win is better than any win that Indiana has. I think that's the argument.
Fine, but again, I think the Alabama win looks less impressive after what happened on Saturday. And you know, Indiana has played well in every game other than Ohio State, which they had to go on the road, and you know, they got behind. There's some special teams errors there. I mean, it's close. It wouldn't surprise me if the committee goes, you know, Tennessee over them, but if it were me, I would have Indiana ahead of them.
I think it's Indiana, Tennessee, Tennessee, Indiana. Don't really care. And I'll explain a little later what I think will be the determining factor there. Then you have two teams left. One of them will be the Big 12 champion. And I don't know who the heck that's going to be, Steve. I don't think anybody knows.
I don't either. But you just sort of generic Big 12 team. They all sort of strike me as the same. So.
Yes, I can't tell the difference among them either. Then you have one at-large team available. Is it possible that is the second team from the ACC? Say it is SMU versus Miami. How about the loser of that game will have two losses, played in a conference championship game, only had one loss during the regular season. Is that the last at-large team?
I think that would depend on the game. If it was a close game that was narrowly decided one way or the other, maybe there's a case. If it's a decisive blowout, then I think it's going to be hard to justify putting in a second team from the ACC. This is one area where the Big Ten and SEC are sort of aligned on is keeping out another ACC team to take one of the spots that they think they might get. So.
Well, I think at that point, your choices are like a three-loss, you know, SEC team. And I'll throw another curveball at you. If the ACC championship game's a blowout, what about Clemson? Would you consider putting them in as that last at-large team?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting idea. Yeah, they had the difficult loss to Georgia early in the season, but I think there's something with the brand. I think that people should be aware of that the committee's going to value these brands. So that's an interesting idea.
And when we come back, I want to talk about some of the matchups that would happen with our playoff scenario. We'll do that when we come back. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hall Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Steve. I'm Jim. We're talking college football. And Steve, when we left it, we were projecting the playoffs. I gave you my idea, which was Oregon, Ohio State would be the number one seed, the winner of the Southeast Conference, number two seed, then say Miami and Boise State get the third and fourth seed, Ohio State, Penn State, Notre Dame, and the loser of the Southeast Conference championship game, either Georgia or Texas, getting the four home games. And then we had Indiana, Tennessee, and then we had potentially a second ACC team and the Big 12 winner going 11-12. What we end up with as a first-round game, Ohio State and Penn State would get one of that second ACC team and the Big 12 winner. What do you think of that kind of matchup for Penn State in the opener?
I think that's favorable. I mean, I've seen all sorts of projections, but that's – I think it is. SMU or some Big 12 team, particularly coming up to State College in December, I like my chances there.
I would, too. I would take that. Then here was, I think, where the matchups might caught. We discussed Indiana or Tennessee being, you know, 9-10 or 10-9. You have as home teams Notre Dame and let's say Georgia, for sake of argument, playing either Indiana or Tennessee. Would your temptation be to have Notre Dame play Indiana, both schools from the same state, and then having a Southeast Conference rematch, Georgia and Tennessee? Or as a committee member, would you want to flip that so you don't have a repeat, you have the Southeast Conference teams not playing each other? What would you do if you were on the committee?
I would do the latter. I like personally the idea of Notre Dame and Indiana doing that interstate game, but I think avoiding, to the extent possible, the SEC versus SEC, any of these conference versus people within their own conference is probably preferable. One, to settle the debate that we were just sort of talking about, you know, is the Big Ten comparable or better than the SEC? These head-to-head matchups should provide a, I think, better answer there. But also, just ratings-wise, I think the getting folks that don't normally play each other, I think that's going to draw more attention.
I agree. And I think they would manipulate the seeding to create that.
Absolutely. I mean, playoffs are here to make money and they know which brands do that, which matchups do that. And my guess is they sort of work their way back from that to try to figure out what are the most interesting matchups going to be. Interesting, the ones that are going to generate the most eyeballs to generate the most money.
And, you know, in talking about this kind of playoff scenario, and I'm tying this back to where we started, the Southeast Conference doesn't have a great team. And to be honest, I'm not sure that Oregon and Ohio State are – I don't think this is one of Ohio State's best teams. And I think Oregon is fairly vulnerable. I mean, they have very, very close wins against Boise State, against Ohio State at home. And also, they struggled when they went on the road to Wisconsin. So, and I was reminded Idaho they struggled with very early in the season. So I don't think there's a super team. So I think this playoff becomes very wide open.
I agree. We don't have like dominant one team or two teams that we've had in the past. All teams, to your point, have shown some vulnerabilities throughout the season, which is the reason I think it's an interesting year to have it go to 12, is because there are a lot more teams that could potentially win it all. It's interesting that Ohio State is not necessarily the best team they've had, even though they spent so much money to try to make sure that it was the best team that they've had. But, you know, the deeper teams, particularly Oregon and Ohio State, it's a long season. People are getting injured. I think that's when you sort of look for that depth maybe to take over. Because we're talking about a lot of additional games, too. That's a lot of uncertainty with potential injuries and the like, too.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's part of it. And the other thing that went on, and I mentioned this to you before we started recording, there were six teams in the top 16 who lost. Now, one of those was Indiana, Ohio State. The rest of the teams that lost, highly ranked, they lost to unranked teams. The one thing, one similarity is every one of these ranked teams that lost was on the road. Is it just me, or does that seem to be a major factor this season, more so than it was in other years?
Well, we talked about in the Big Ten the idea that traveling multiple time zones and how much of a difference that's made. I mean, one thing that it's going to be unknowable for a lot of these SEC teams coming to northern stadiums when you potentially have snowy conditions on the ground. If you've never experienced that, you don't know how you're going to react. I don't know how they can try to somehow emulate that to prepare people for it. So I don't think that should be overestimated. You know, there were some mock playoff committees earlier this week with respect to Georgia playing Penn State. And despite what Feinbaum and others think at ESPN, it was a pickup game in terms of the betting line. And I think that has a lot to do with the idea that there could be snow in State College. And that could be a great, I guess, neutralizing presence when that's what happened. I mean, I saw it happen with the Steelers-Browns game. It's like the snow starts coming around and suddenly, you know, all bets are off.
Well, weather would be an issue. What's interesting is I think the games that would really – I think there may only be one of those, or one or two, only one, at least in my projection. I only have one SEC team going north. I have Tennessee conceivably going to Notre Dame. And, you know, South Bend could be pretty interesting in mid to late December. So we'll see. But, Steve, all of this can't happen for Penn State unless they get through this last game. So all of us had our worries and concerns about traveling to Minnesota. I don't think we have much of a concern, though, for Maryland coming to State College. Or do you?
Well, I live in Maryland, so I have my own bragging rights here in terms of all the Maryland fans I have to deal with routinely. You know, I will say I've seen James Franklin lose to Maryland twice in State College. I was at the game, I forget, was it 13, 14, where Maryland came up and didn't shake the hands. That was disappointing, to say the least. And then we all watched the 2020 game on TV. That wasn't even close. So I think Franklin's lost two more games than Paterno or Bill O'Brien did. So I don't put it past him. That said, Minnesota was the tougher test. That's more of the matchup issue in terms of the Minnesota potentially having advantage in the trenches there. And I think Penn State, because they have a lot to play for, I think the fact that Maryland sort of at this point quit on the season, they don't have as much to play for. Penn State should win comfortably. But again, it can't be like Minnesota where you sort of let this team hang around. They get an early lead until they think they can beat you, and that would certainly make their season. The other thing to keep in mind, too, I think Michigan's won the last three times against Ohio State. For some reason that happens, and they get an upset. I think Penn State would go to the Big Ten Championship, if I'm not mistaken. I think it's better for them not to go and get the
okay, bias, that was going to be my next question. You know, what would, as a Penn State guy, what would you prefer? You know, do you want Ohio State to win that game, go to the conference championship game? Or do you want Ohio, are you going to be rooting for Michigan and want Penn State to go to the conference championship game?
I mean, maybe it sounds cynical, but when Michigan and Ohio State play, you can't really root for either one. You sort of root for Mother Nature to sort of come in there with some weather event. But I think it's better for Penn State, particularly as a fan. I'd love to see a home playoff game there at State College. I think Penn State's had a long time because their buys were sort of front-loaded in the first part of the season, but that could probably hit them at the the right time. So I think that would be preferable for Penn State. Not that they don't want to win the Big Ten championship, but at this point, I really sort of wonder what how meaningful these championship games are really going to be moving forward. It just seems like regardless of which conference you're in, there's probably more of an incentive, I think, to just have the bye week and have the home game. Where things could get interesting, though, is if we start getting upsets in these championship games, and then it's got some automatic bids there for the playoff. That's going to throw all that work you just did out the window and going to make the committee's job more interesting there down the stretch. Hopefully we don't have that, but you never know.
Well, you know, that's the argument. As I'm old enough to remember when Penn State entered the Big Ten, and there was a bit of a, you know, Penn State fans just couldn't figure out why teams were so concerned about these conference championships. There were fellow Big Ten teams were more concerned about winning the Rose Bowl than they were concerned about winning a national championship, Steve.
Yeah, when you listen to the folks from the 94 team, you know, it's like the Big Ten comes out there and like, congratulations. You know, we're like, we're interested in playing in national championships. We don't care about this. And I think that's the right mindset, candidly. So I'm glad that Penn State really adopted that. So, you know, it's a different era now. And obviously the playoff and the bowl situation is going to be reflection of that, I guess. But you know, I think that's – go ahead.
I was going to say the other part of this equation is, you know, you asked how will the committee treat Indiana, say, after this loss. But I think there's also going to be a really tough question is how do they treat the teams that lose their conference championship game? How much does that count? Because candidly, you know, if it's Georgia who gets into the conference championship game with Texas and say they lose, that would be loss number three for Georgia. But I can't imagine, you know, again, they've got that SEC label on them. I can't imagine them dropping them very far.
Yeah, that is something sort of unknown heading into this year with the 12-team format. You know, is how much are you going to penalize teams for losing these conference games? And if they do it too much, that's going to sort of accelerate the thing I was talking about. They're just going to go away. I think it's going to depend on sort of where those teams are sort of heading into it. You know, we talked about that ACC game. You know, if it's a competitive game versus it's not a competitive game, they're probably more incentive to sort of drop them out of the playoff at that point. I mean, look, when you look at the Big Ten, you know, Oregon, Ohio State, I mean, both these teams are going to make the playoff regardless of the outcome there. I guess the same thing with Georgia and Texas. It really comes a question of that seeding. And that could be important because Georgia having ranked sort of the higher end versus having to maybe travel up north for a game potentially if they lose again. That is particularly significant when you talk about your playoff prospects and your pathways to the championship.
It definitely is. And I think as I said earlier, though, I look at Georgia as the only Southeast Conference team with the schedule argument because they played, no matter what the measure, Georgia comes away with the toughest schedule in the country. And so that is justified. From Texas, Ole Miss, those other teams, just shut up. Just shut up. Just go beat Florida. Go beat Oklahoma. So I don't want to hear it from them. All right. Me getting a bit salty. That has to be the last word, Steve. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy cafe tea pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.